At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
And I'm Katie.
Oh, thank you so much, guys, for your patience.
Yes.
We've had a really tiring, exhausting, but so insanely fun weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sarah's wedding was awesome.
It was amazing.
And she's off enjoying her honeymoon on the Amalfi Coast, and I'm very, very jealous.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. It looks amazing.
Long, long weekend. I also had to go to a gala on Sunday night for the Somerset County Democratic Committee.
Booked and busy, dude. Damn.
Booked and busy. I am so tired, but I do have to say that Sunday night was worth it because we got to hear some really passionate speeches from Senator Cory Booker and Representatives Bonnie Watson Coleman and Tom Malinowski. So it was really awesome. Oh, and the best part, they did announcements for the local candidates that are running. So Jessica and I got to have our name announced by our chair of the Somerset County Democratic Committee. And that was just like, it was just really exciting to hear that announced to a room of our peers. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't have much going on. So I mean, this is a late night recording.
Yes, coming to you on Monday night.
Yeah, Monday night when we said we would drop it Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm going to have really fun, a real fun time. See, I am so tired. Sorry if I sound crazy during this episode, but it's going to be a fun night. Next few hours of editing this to get it to you guys for Tuesday morning.
Yes. So you know what? For the sake of future you, let's just let's get right into it.
All right, cool. I'm down with that.
I feel like I should preface all of this with my, I guess, personal bias or maybe lack thereof, because honestly, like before this, I didn't give a shit either way about football.
I mean, same.
I genuinely didn't care or think about it at all until I started this research. Mm-hmm. Outside of the shitty things that I see different NFL players doing.
Yeah.
And now I hate football. And also, fuck you, Brett Favre, for taking all that money, ? You asshole. That's in my notes. I truly hate football so much now that I didn't even care or bother to do any kind of dive into the history of the sport or the league outside of what we're talking about, which is traumatic brain injuries and CTE.
I feel like we don't necessarily need that kind of background history on it because, it's the American pastime sport. We all know football, okay? We don't need to talk about the history.
Oh, yeah.
What we need to talk about is the damage it's doing to people's brains.
But for a Katie episode to not do a deep dive into the history, that's really saying something.
Yeah.
That's really saying something.
You really do love your deep dives.
I really do love just seeing where something came from. So for me to forego the history of that, for, you know, longtime listeners, they really understand what that means. So, as I said before, today we're going to talk about the traumatic brain injuries acquired by football players and the NFL's extreme denial of this for years, and what the heck is going up with football players' noggins. As I mentioned in our short episode from Thursday or whatever, I watched a 2-hour documentary called The League of Denial from Frontline that came out in 2013.
Oh, I love a Frontline documentary.
So good. It's on YouTube for free. Since that's almost a decade old, the data from that was also a decade old. So to fill in those gaps, I turned to Meredith Wadman of science.org, a group called the Union of Concerned Scientists, the New York Times author Ben Spiegel, Fox author Brian Resnick, and for some other small quotes, the rest of those sources will be listed in the show notes or otherwise specified from when I read them. Just want to list those up front. Got to shout out our authors because my mom got all on our case once about our generation and news.
Oh my God. She's like, why don't you trust any of the news? Is that a question that we need to ask?
It's just like, it's not that I just don't trust the news. I just don't trust humans. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
And this is a prime example of reason why. So we're going to kind of start this in the 1970s. Mostly because that's when Monday Night Football, or really just like the popularity of watching football in America, took off around the country. Mm. Monday night games have always been rated as among the highest watched slots in the nation. One of the quotes about it was, "People like violence. The biggest cheers are for the touchdowns, but the second biggest cheers are for the nasty hits."
The same could be said for hockey fans.
Oh, absolutely.
Myself included in that, I would say my first favorite part of it is obviously when the Devils win, but my second favorite part of it is when punches are thrown. So,
yeah, people,
they're not wrong.
People love to watch that shit. And the logo for Monday Night Football in like the 90s for a long time was two helmets smacking against each other.
Oh, yes!
Until they exploded into pieces. Yeah.
Wow, what a blast from the past.
Right? People love the violence and the NFL marketed it. And I mentioned it in the last thing we were talking about it. There's something like so Coliseum battles about football.
What does that say about us as the humans who are consuming that and our psyches around violence?
Humans have always loved to watch violence. Always. We used to watch fucking executions and shit. Like, we've always loved to watch this. We're a dark group of people. So Lee Steinberg, the agent that the movie Jerry Maguire was based off of, saw a lot of this violence firsthand with the clients he represented. One year, he represented 21 starting quarterbacks in the NFL, including Troy Aikman, who in 1994 took a knee directly to his head on top of his helmet. And because of that, he couldn't return to the game and instead was brought back to a local hospital. In League of Denial, Steinberg recounts his interactions with Aikman in the hospital. Aikman asks, "Where am I?" He says, "You're in the hospital." "Why am I here?" "You got hurt." "Who did we play?" "The 49ers." "Did we win?" "Yeah." "Did I play well?" "Yes, you won us the game." "What does that mean?" "You're going to the Super Bowl." Then after a few minutes of celebration leads to silence, Aikman turns to Steinberg. "Where am I?" "You're in the hospital." And the whole conversation starts again.
No.
After a few more minutes of celebration, 10 minutes passed, Aikman turns to Steinberg. "Where am I?"
It's like short-term dementia.
Yeah. And that's, you know, just one of the blows to the head. So this is 94. We're really starting to kind of see concern about concussions and head trauma pop up all over the place. The story, in theory, starts in 94 with this and the creation of something known as the MTBI, which is the Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Committee. It started by the NFL commissioner, Paul Tagliabue. Paul, asshole, referred to the issue of concussions as a pack journalist thing.
What?
Yeah, basically saying like there's no concussion issue.
I think if journalists have something to write about, then there's definitely an issue.
Tagliabue creates this committee and appoints New York Jets team doctor and rheumatologist. Thank you. Rheumatologist, Dr. Elliot Pellman, as chair, despite lacking any previous experience in brain science.
What?
for those who didn't know exactly, a rheumatologist is someone who studies the branch of medicine devoted to diagnosing and managing the disorders whose common feature is inflammation in the bones, muscle, joints, and organs, not the brain.
So, just to speak on personal experience from that, that is who finally figured out what was going on with me when I had rheumatic fever as a child. And it took forever to get to that. And that was something that was affecting the joints in the lower half of my body, and I couldn't walk. It also affected my heart. That's a muscle. Not my brain. Not my brain at all.
It makes a lot of sense that, like, the New York Jets would have a team doctor who studies joints and muscles and bones and how that can impact organs. Does it make sense that he's put in charge of the mild traumatic brain injury committee?
Yeah, definitely does not make sense.
When asked about the issue of concussions, Pellman tells Newsday, "We discussed it on the list of things every time we have a league meeting. We think the issue of knees, of drugs and steroids, and of drinking is a far greater problem, according to the number of incidents."
People knock their heads together every single game, whether it be a minor knock or a major one, that is still trauma on the brain. They are affected every single game, and over time, it takes a toll. What?
I mean, you can also, like, fix your knees.
As far as the alcoholism, like, that also affects your brain. And if they're getting knocked around in their heads and then drinking alcohol, that makes it worse.
It also just sounds like they're just worried about them, like, partying too much. Yeah. Not even about, like, the alcohol hurting their brain. Like, they're just partying. Pellman also tells Sports Illustrated that concussions are a part of the profession, an occupational risk. So he's like, yeah, you're gonna get hit in the head, because, you know, we advertise this with two helmets smacking against each other until they explode. It's part of the job. And again, he's not a brain doctor. He's not a neuro doctor. So they didn't take this seriously at all. Pellman and the commissioner of the NFL aggressively defended the league. Pellman and his NFL loyalists on this committee insisted for 15 years that the league was okay.
What?
Yeah.
How is there no oversight on this?
So before, what? I know. So before we can move on, just, like, I want to keep that in mind. So Pellman from 1994 and for 15 years going forward was like, no, the league is good. And we're going to kind of hear some, like, contradicting things with that. But, like, there's been a lot of contradictory stances from the NFL. Most of it up until recently has been like, we're not the problem. But before we move on.
Am I the drama?
Am I the drama? Yes, NFL, you are.
Yes, you are.
Before we can move on at all, we need to pause for a second and talk about something that's also been going on while all of this was happening. And we're going to go back a few years to the 1990s when a Steelers player named Mike Webster, also known as Iron Mike, retired. He retired in the 1991, I believe. He had a 17-year career in the NFL and 25 years of playing football total, including high school and college. He went from an intelligent, funny, kind, loving, lovable man to what his family describes as violent, confused, with bouts of rage. They had interviews with him before he, spoiler alert, he dies at the age of 50 in 2022. Oh. They had interviews with him from before he passed where he would say, like, part of a sentence and then he would stop after, like, 30 seconds of speaking and couldn't keep going. And he would just repeat, like, I'm just tired, I'm confused, I'm just tired, I'm confused. His wife recounts issues of him being unable to keep up with the kids physically or mentally. His son, Colin, said that there was a time where he broke down crying in front of him because he was so confused. And then continuous bouts of confusion led to rage. Rage led to violence. And his wife ended up divorcing him.
I can only imagine how, on the inside, when you're experiencing this kind of memory loss and confusion, how upsetting, well, no, how upset and how frustrated you become with yourself. So then that anger manifests outside to the people around you, because where else is it going to go?
Absolutely.
All because you played a game.
Absolutely. Because you played a game. Yeah. His wife divorced him. He lost almost all of his money due to poor choices because his brain is not working well, and he's living out of his pickup truck. His son said that his dad told him that he was getting to the point where he'll be cold, and he doesn't realize he can fix it by putting on a jacket, which is devastating.
God.
Another friend of his said that he would go days, like he was unable to fall asleep. His brain couldn't regulate his sleep pattern. So Webster once asked him to tase him in the stomach so that he could sleep. And his friend kind of alluded that that was like a common practice.
Oh, he would do
he
it.
He would do it, yeah.
I mean, I guess when your friend's desperate enough to get some sleep,
yeah,
you go along with what they ask.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, he said he was my hero. Like, what else could I do? He was begging me. Yeah. Now we're up to 94, 95, 96, 97, when the NFL has created this committee, is denying all of this stuff. It's 1997, and Webster goes to see a lawyer about the injuries he faced in the NFL. And his lawyer literally was like, yeah, we're going to claim disability for brain damage because it's clear that something is wrong with you. And even his lawyer said that he could see that he was clearly intelligent, but he could only hold on to snippets of that for 30 seconds at a time.
My God.
Yeah. Four doctors came together and looked at his medical records, and all of the doctors agreed 100% in 100 pages of a claim that football caused his, what they were referring to as dementia. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, people can't see me. That's mm-hmm. right. I pointed at yes. Katie and I was like, yes. Yes.
The NFL hired their own doctors to look at the case.
Oh, boy.
And Dr. Westbrook, and he agrees with no question that the injuries are football related.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So because of that, the retirement board had no choice but to grant him monthly payments with the admission that head injuries he suffered as a football player caused this.
Wow.
But while all of that is happening buried deep in this claim, the NFL's committee is in the public saying, no, 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 concussions are not an issue.
At the time, was this case publicized? I know now it's everything is very much publicized when court dealings are going on, but was there any of that in the 90s when this was happening?
Not really outside of Pittsburgh, where it was happening.
Yeah,
it wasn't a huge case, and the NFL did everything they could to not have it become huge. And then Mike Webster dies at the age of 50 in 2002, 2 years after the settlement. Took 3 years for this to become settled.
This poor man.
I know. His body was brought to a doctor named Dr. Bennett Amalu, a Nigerian-born man who didn't give a shit about football because that's an American violent sport. He's a trained neuropathologist, and when he was looking at Webster's body, he said that he thought he was 70 years old. Had he not known his age, that would have been his guess.
Wow.
His body was completely destroyed. Several discs were out of spot. He had broken vertebrae. His teeth were falling out. And his son said that he used to super glue his teeth back into his mouth.
Oh my God.
He had these like huge cracks on his feet from just like running and all of just like rough foot life. So he would duct tape his feet so that the cracks would go back together so that it wouldn't like hurt as it pulled on his skin. So there's these like terrifying images of like his legs just looking like out of control.
Oh my God.
Webster's forehead was fixed to his scalp with scar tissue. So like normally when you can like, this is gross, but like you can like peel the skin you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh, I'm understanding.
Yes, not...
I'm understanding.
Not a babe.
I'm just... I'm at a loss for words over yeah. that.
So after so many hits to the head, it had built up so much scar tissue that there was like a dent and it was like fixed.
Oh my God.
But when the skull was opened from the outside, the brain looked completely normal.
What?
So they expected to see a shriveled brain, which is what they would see from Alzheimer's.
Okay.
Or something like a neurodegenerative disease like that. When they okay. sliced into the brain is when they saw evidence of a chronic disease, CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy. What that does, just like a brief explanation, is it smothers the brain cells with a certain type of proteins. So okay. from the outside, you wouldn't know until you look at the slices of the brain.
Okay.
So that's, he discovers that later. Yes.
Question. I know that they are now doing an autopsy on him and getting to actually physically see the inside of the brain, but can we see this? Can we see CTE on MRIs? Could you back then? Can you now?
You can make guesses, but the only official way to diagnose someone with CTE is to autopsy their brain.
God.
So you genuinely will not know until crazy. They're dead. Because you have to like look at the proteins in their brain goo, basically. Wow. And their brain folds. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. He's seeing that. Dr. Bennett Amalu is seeing that. 2003, the year after he's seeing this, the NFL's MTBI publishes one of their papers in a medical journal called Neurosurgery that completely downplays the risks of concussions, saying there's no evidence of long-term issues caused by hitting your head in football. What? They also suggested that this evidence might be safe for college and high school players, even though they did not study any one of those ages.
Who was writing these papers?
A rheumatologist.
How is this being allowed to be put into medical journals? Is that where this is going?
Neurosurgery is a medical journal.
Where is the oversight on this medical journal, and who is being allowed to publish what about what? Why is a rheumatologist being allowed to publish things that a neurosurgeon should be the one discussing and doing tests and analysis on? What?
Dr. Cantu, the neurosurgeon, the editor of the sports medicine section, objected to these being published because these findings were not matching up with double-blind studies, but they were published anyway.
Wow. Whom allowed this to happen?
In League of Denial... Wow. Dr. Cantu talks about the person who was kind of in charge of like what gets published in neurosurgery and how he was an author on some of these papers involved with the NFL and a huge NFL supporter.
Wow. I wonder how much he was getting paid for all of these papers.
I mean, the NFL makes like
The
NFL makes a minimum of like $8 billion a year.
Yeah, it's actually insane
mm-hmm.
how much money they make.
It's so much money. Okay. Yeah, it's out of control. Dr. Amalu, around this same time, is looking at slides of Mike Webster's brain and is so shocked by what he saw that he had to, in fact, confirm it was Webster's brain. This was the first time that signs of CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, a neurodegenerative disease, had been found in someone this young. So Dr. Amalu, seeing the MTBI's paper in neurosurgery, is like, hey, you guys might be interested in seeing what I found out, because he thought that they legitimately cared and like would want to change it.
Yeah, he's like, these are doctors. They took an oath.
He now describes this move as incredibly, incredibly naive. He publishes his findings in that paper. And the MTBI responded by writing their own article in the same journal back, attacking it and publicly insisting that Amalu misunderstood brain science and wanted a retraction.
What?
Yeah.
How are you going to tell the neurosurgeon that he's misunderstanding brain science when you're a rheumatologist? Mm-hmm.
That's also not a few doctors spoke on this. That's not a thing that happens in medical journals. Like, it's not, this isn't the New York Times where someone published a piece.
It's not a tit for tat back and forth.
Asking a doctor for a retraction on their data is not a thing that happens.
The motherfucking audacity of the NFL.
So for the NFL to publish a paper being like, you don't understand, we want to retract this. Many people in League of Denial commented on how just fucked up and unbelievable it was that that happened. Amalo didn't retract, and I love him. He then got the brain of Terry Long, another Steelers player, who ended his life by drinking antifreeze.
Oh.
CTE was also in his brain.
And I'm assuming that he took his life because of the things that he was experiencing due to that CTE.
Yes, because it's depression, bouts of rage, confusion, memory loss. I mean, it completely fucks up. Your brain is being smothered. It completely fucks up your brain.
You're literally losing your own sense of self.
Yeah, but you get it in glimpses of 30 seconds. So you have it and then it's gone. It's like someone puts something in your hand for a second and then just pulls it right back out. It honestly sounds like the most frustrating thing I can imagine. And also painful.
Yeah.
So Dr. Amalo puts out another paper and is met with the MTBI saying that Amalo isn't, again, a Nigerian-born man, that he and raised, isn't practicing medicine. They insinuated in a medical journal that he's practicing voodoo.
Oh, you bet. No. Bro, that's racist as fuck. Yeah. That is racist as fuck. What?
Yep.
In a fucking medical? What is happening?
Yeah.
This just keeps getting kookier and kookier by the minute.
It gets worse. So we're seeing a continuous pattern of the NFL not taking this seriously or even listening to Dr. Amalo, who discovered this and had his findings confirmed by other leading brain scientists at the time.
He literally made an incredible, groundbreaking discovery. And these people are like, ain't no fucking way. You better retract that shit. Like, get out of here.
Get out of here.
He did something amazing.
Ah! Oh, yeah. Just so you know, we're only on page 5 and my notes are like maybe 14 pages long.
Okay.
So it gets worse. And people are probably like, well, it gets better with time. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. We're in 2006, where a huge change for the NFL happens. Roger Goodell becomes the commissioner, and he replaces Dr. Pellman with an actual brain doctor, Ira Carson.
Wow.
But Ira Carson also doesn't believe that football leads to brain trauma somehow.
Are these people just, like, fucking blind? It's clear as day.
No, they must be getting paid off. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
Or they're really horrible at their jobs.
They, like, paid enough attention in medical school to pass, but, like, didn't really give a fuck.
I mean, they could be an amazing doctor, and they're getting paid off.
Yeah.
Or they're horrible doctors. That's, like, it's one of two options.
Both are horrible.
And both are really bad. So after that, dealing with all of this change in the NFL. We're in 2007, and the New York Times author Alan Schwartz reports that player Andre Waters kills himself in November, with the explanation for his suicide being a mystery. Alan Schwartz quotes in the New York Times, "The neuropathologist, Dr. Bennett Amalu, the University of Pittsburgh, a leading expert in forensic pathology, determined that Mr. Waters' brain tissue had degenerated into that of an 85-year-old man with similar characteristics as those of early-stage Alzheimer's victims. Dr. Amalu said he believed that the damage was caused or drastically expedited by successive concussions Mr. Waters, 44, had sustained playing football." 44.
Every single piece of that had me... I wish people could see us, because the way I, like, sat up in my chair, mm-hmm. And my jaw is dropped, like, every bit of that was worse and worse and worse. 44?
44. And his brain tissue was the age of 85-year-old man with early Alzheimer's.
So... what decade are we in right now? Are we still in
the 90s? We're in 2007, my dude.
Okay, we're in 2007? Okay. Oh, that's 2 years before we graduated high school. Okay. Were there, like, any kind of rules or regulations in the NFL about if someone gets a concussion, like, how long do they have to wait before they can play again? Was there anything like that?
At the time, if they got a concussion, depending on how they seemed, they could just go back into the game.
What?
They just, they, I, and I get into this later, but they just literally 2 days ago had to add a thing to keep to the protocol to keep people who just got a concussion from going back into the game. Because that's what happened to to that guy we're going to talk about later in the video you sent me.
In the episode.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's 2022.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really bad.
My chest is tight.
Oh, no. No one is taking Dr. Amalo seriously, so he partners up with a previous doctor from the Steelers, Julian Bales, and they get another brain of an ex-NFL player, Justin Strzelecki, and he also had CTE. So now we've looked at three brains of NFL players, and they all had CTE. In the summer of 2007... Goodell holds a conference asking doctors, the NFL commissioner holds a conference asking doctors from all over the world to come and talk to them about brain injuries and concussions, because that sounds really good for the NFL to do. Everyone except for Dr. Amalo, the man who discovered CTE in football players, was invited to this conference. He wasn't even informed about it. Dr. Bales told him about it.
Bruh, he should have been the keynote fucking speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, that's petty as fuck. That is petty as fuck on the NFL's part.
It's not petty. If you think about it, it's actually very calculated. They held this conference because it sounds really good that they're going to do this.
Calculated, so.
Yeah, but they're not trying to be petty. They're just trying to hold this conference and have all of the doctors say what they want them to say so that later in the future they can be like, no, we didn't know.
Oh, my God.
But Dr. Bales goes and presents their data.
Yes!
And they didn't take him or it very seriously at all. He was met basically with the idea of, you don't know how to do research like we do. You don't know what you're talking about.
What the fuck? You're like, I'm literally working with the person who discovered this.
Yeah. Well, not only that, just being like, yeah, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Like, what is wrong with you?
Like, what?
And this is where I point out in my notes that at this time, everyone is well aware of the fact that CTE is found in like boxers and other sports that have like head trauma. But for some reason, they're not even considering that football could be an option because helmets.
Make it make sense. Make it make sense.
Genuinely, people are like, helmets. No.
And because of like what we talked about in our little announcement the other day. Yeah, the helmets, they help save your skull.
Yeah, you're not,
they're not really doing anything to stop your free moving brain from knocking around.
Your brain is just sloshing around in there. It's not really connected to anything. It's like really easy for it to get disconnected from the spinal cord. Like,
pretty damn easy.
In the fall of 2007, a pamphlet is passed out to all NFL players saying, as long as each injury is treated properly, there is no evidence that concussions can cause long-term issues.
How is it even legal for them to say no evidence when there literally is actual evidence that is documented? Like, how is that legal?
Because they have found no evidence.
They themselves, but nobody else.
Yeah, because Dr. Amalo was not there, you know?
I just think that there should be some kind of rule that says that you need to look at other peer-reviewed and published medical journals and papers before you're allowed to make a conclusive synopsis of your individual research. Like, I feel like it needs to be, you need to be cross-checking with other doctors' work before you could just conclusively say things like that.
Which I imagine if they were saying no one has found evidence of that. But that's not what they said. They said they have not found evidence of that.
I just feel like that shouldn't be allowed.
They're not lying. People just aren't paying attention to grammar. People are like, oh, they haven't found evidence of that. Okay. No one's found evidence of that. No, the NFL just hasn't found it themselves. And this is why words are so fucking important.
Yep.
Like, people are like, words don't matter. Yes, they goddamn do. So Dr. Mollo is shunned by the NFL. He leaves Pittsburgh and moves to Northern California. And to this day, Mollo states that he wishes he never met Mike Webster.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
While all of this is happening, other doctors have taken up on his crusade. Dr. Julian Bales partners up with a man, Dr. Kevin Guskowitz, and they release a study on the risk of depression in retired NFL players based on a survey of more than 2,500 former players. The paper, wow. I write, the paper is published in the official journal of the American College of Sports Medicine, and it concludes that, quote, professional football players with a history of three or more concussions are at a significantly greater risk for having depressive episodes in life compared to those players with no history of concussion.
You know, that makes me so sad that a lot of these people are getting into the sport and playing the sport because they genuinely love to play it. But in the end, you're developing depression because of it. And as somebody with lifelong depression, I feel bad for you that you're doing something that you love and then something negative comes out of it.
And and that's not even including all of their other life trauma and other potential mm-hmm. things for depression. Like, this is genuinely just making it so much worse.
Yeah.
In 2008, Dr. Anne McKee, who was a leading doctor in Alzheimer's, got a call from Boston University, who were the main doctors who picked up the crusade of Dr. Amalu's work. And they were looking into the brains of football players, and they asked if she was interested. And she, as a huge football fan, born and raised into a football family, was in. And she joined the team of researchers to continue Amala's work. She was also joined by an ex-college football player and an ex-professional wrestler, Chris Nowinski, to help reach out to families of ex-football players to see if they can get their brains to study after passing. And he did this because after his own personal career of head trauma, he is positive that he is developing this more serious issues of CTE, which I can't even imagine, like, being aware of that happening. Like, that must be devastating. As they began to study more and more brains, they get to a point where they've studied 6 brains in total. All of them have CTE. So in 2009, they go to Tampa Bay, where the Super Bowl is being held. And across the street from the Super Bowl, they hold a press conference about it. But only 24 reporters show up. And no one gave a shit.
What the fuck?
Yeah, just no one cared. In May of 2009, Dr. McKee presents her findings to Dr. Ira Kasson and other members of the MTBI at NFL headquarters in New York. And Dr. McKee says that the panel was dismissive of her and her research. A quote, "It was like, oh, the girl talked. Now we can get back to more serious business," she told Frontline.
Oh, that makes me so angry.
Right?
So angry. We know exactly what that fucking feels like.
Yeah. Committee member Dr. Henry Fewer, like fewer brain cells, told Frontline that Dr. McKee's research did not indicate a specific cause for CTE and could not show the prevalence of the disease, given that her findings were based solely on case studies.
The amount that I want to, like, throat punch that man.
I know. I'm like, I was listening to him talk in the documentary and I was like, I shut the fuck up. Here's the quote that he said. I just have a problem. Anne McKee, she cannot tell me where it's starting. We don't know the cause and effect. We don't know that right now. We don't know the evidence, Feuer said. She was seeing only those that were in trouble, and we know that there are thousands roaming around that are not having problems. So I think that's where we may have had an issue.
Do you actually know that, though? Or are they just not saying anything to you, or you're not asking?
Yeah. Are you just asking the wrong fucking questions? And there was at one point where...
Or are you not asking questions at all?
Well, I think it was Julian Bales. I don't want to put words in his mouth. There was a doctor in League of Denial who said that, maybe it was Dr. Cantu, that their research was like clearly geared in a way that would get them the results that they wanted. Mm-hmm. Like they were asking specific questions to make sure that they would get the results that they wanted, to ensure that they would not be at fault.
It is so very manipulative.
Yeah. In September 2009, still, in a front page article, the New York Times reports that an NFL-funded study of retired players has found that former players are 19 times more likely than the general population to have dementia, Alzheimer's, and other memory-related diseases.
I wonder why.
But that the NFL met that back, saying, oops, wait, sorry, that study is flawed.
How? Did they say how it was flawed?
The New York Times quotes, an NFL spokesman, Greg Alio, said in an email message that the study did not formally diagnose dementia, that it was subject to shortcomings of telephone surveys, and that there are thousands of retired players who do not have memory problems. Memory disorders may affect people who have never played football or other sports, Mr. Alio says. We're trying to understand as it relates to our retired players. So, like, some players are fine, and some people who don't play football have memory issues, too.
Which is interesting that they decided to go with that, because the study literally mentions that other people can have it. These players are just 19 times more likely.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
Does it make sense, man? Like, why is that your go-to? They already are acknowledging that other people have it. They're just saying what these players are experiencing makes them more likely. Why are you trying to say that they... Because that's what they're... I'm like losing my words right now.
Dude, I totally understand. I totally understand.
They're trying to make it seem like the people who are doing this study are failing to acknowledge the fact that other people... have dementia and Alzheimer's and things, but like that's literally not what's happening. What? Why are you trying to confuse people? I mean, I know why.
We know why. December of 2009, in a private conversation, Greg Aiello, the guy we were just talking about, NFL spokesman, tells Alan Schwartz from the New York Times, quote, it's quite obvious from the medical research that's been done that concussions can lead to long-term problems. In a private conversation. Even so, this was the very first time anyone associated with the league admits that concussions had long-term effects. But it's a real, like, he said, you know? But it happened. Yeah. It's because just it not a private conversation. Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Following that private conversation, they announced stricter return-to-play guidelines. Stating that any player that exhibits symptoms of a concussion should not return to play on the same day.
Oh, the same day.
The same day. So it's
because the brain just bounces back like that.
Yes. So it's 2009 and we're finally saying, okay, if you have a concussion, you shouldn't play the same day.
I just need to say, as a person who has had a couple concussions, I would be out of work from my like retail job. For like a week at most, like, you know, at the least, you know, when I had a concussion.
I got kicked in the back of the head. I was out of work for a week. I couldn't do anything for a week.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I still get dizzy spells because of that stuff. And you're just expecting these people to go crash into another person again the next day?
The next day.
Come on.
The following year, in addition to donating $1 million towards their research efforts, the NFL writes a letter stating that they will make Dr. McKee's Center for the Study of Traumatic Encephalopathy the preferred brain bank for the NFL for future research on brains of deceased NFL players. So they're like making moves in public to try and like kind of backtrack because it's now impossible to deny what is happening.
Yeah. We're also really coming into like 2009. This is when we were seniors in high school. Like Facebook is a few years old now.
Yep.
Like people have more access to
information,
sharing these stories and the information and
people can talk to each other now, basically. And this is also when things start taking a really, really scary turn. Dr. McKee and the BU group report the first case of CTE in a college football player, 21-year-old Owen Thomas.
The first case that we know of.
Well, that's true. Thomas had never been diagnosed with a concussion, raising fears that CTE in his case was caused by the subconcussive hits that happened in the course of his football career. So just from
minor hits are fucking you up over time.
Just from the brain hitting the skull, it caused CTE and he took his own life at 21.
Oh my God.
Yeah. In 2011, a lawsuit is brought against the NFL by 4,500 players who all claim that the league engaged in a concerted effort of deception and denial in its handling of the science of concussions and brain trauma.
Oh, shit.
It's not until 2013 that the NFL agrees to pay $765 million to settle the lawsuit with retired players. But as a part of the settlement, the league does not admit any wrongdoing.
Oh my God. I mean, I would think just the money alone immediately shows us that you know you fucked up.
On the days following the settlement, Commissioner Goodell reiterates that there is no admission of guilt. There was no admission that anything was caused by football.
Okay, bro, no one believes you.
Yeah, no one believes you. As of October 2013, lawyers are still determining how the proceeds will be used for former players. ESPN reports that any retired player who died before 2006 would be excluded from the settlement, and that it's unclear if there's enough money to cover all of the players that do qualify. $765 million is not enough. It's not.
Yeah, because how many people was it?
4,500.
Yeah.
Oh, but just wait until we get to 2022. Just remember all of that because it gets worse.
Okay.
From the New York Times, reporters Mark Finaru-Wada and Steve Finaru wrote in their book, A League of Denial, which then is turned into the documentary. The league used that journal, which some of the researchers would come to ridicule as the Journal of No NFL Concussions, the neurosurgery, to publish unprecedented series of papers, several of which were rejected by their peer reviewers and editors, and later disavowed by even some of their own authors. A 2016 New York Times study found that much of the concussion data the committee used for its papers was significantly and likely knowingly flawed. Like, fuck you. In 2017, from science.org, the largest study of its kind has found damage in the vast majority of former football players' brains donated for research after they developed mental symptoms during life. Of 202 former players of the U.S. version of the game whose brains were examined, 87% showed the diagnostic signs of CTE. Among former NFL players in the sample, that number jumped to 99%.
Oh my God. Okay, so at first when you said, what was it, 87? I was like, oh yeah, she's going to say 87 people. And then you said 87% and my mind was blown.
87% of just football players in general. So not even professionally. We're talking about high school, college, just playing football for funsies. 87%.
Little kids play it. pretty rough.
Yeah. So the New York Times went on a little further to explain more of that study. And it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, published findings from a study of the brains of 202 players. 177 had CTE. Of those 202 players, 111 of them were NFL players.
Damn.
And 110 of the 111 had CTE.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
But no evidence. Pfft, my ass. Come on.
The thing that I do love is that the New York Times and the Journal says there was a selection bias inherent to the study because many of the brains were donated because the players' families suspected CTE. But as the New York Times noted, even if you add in the brains of the 1,200 other NFL players who have died since the study began and gave each one a negative result for CTE, the prevalence of CTE would still be unusually high at almost 9%.
Wow.
9% of NFL players. And that is the lowest number possible.
And that's only if
that's
every single one of those other 1,200 were negative.
Yeah, that's the lowest possible number it could possibly be. Like, is 9%. That's way 9%. Like, okay, we're gonna go even a little bit further. You wanted science, and I fucking delivered it for you, my dude. The researchers found that in addition to the NFL players, 43 out of 53 brains of former college players showed signs of CTE.
Wow.
So did 7 of 8 who played professional football in Canada and 9 of 14 semi-professional players. Here's where our parents... Hey, you listen to me? Listen. The brains of college and professional players were more extensively affected. 86% of former professional players had severe disease, and 56% of college players. 56%. The team reports today in the Journal of the American Medical Association, former high school players with CTE, 3 were diagnosed out of 14, had mild brain disease as defined by researchers. No CTE was found in the brains of the 2 men who played football only before high school. So if your kiddo is just like having fun and playing and stops there, there was no CTE found in those 2 men. But this sport is fucking dangerous. It's really, really dangerous. Remember those 4,500 people who, like, sued the NFL?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going back to that. In June of 2021, NRA, the Associated Press, published this article. Quote, the NFL on Wednesday pledged to halt the use of race norming, which assumed that black players started out with lower cognitive function.
Oh, my God.
In the $1 billion settlement of brain injury claims and review past scores of any potential race bias, the practice made it harder for black retirees to show a deficit and qualify for the award. The standards were created in the 1990s in hopes of offering more appropriate treatment to dementia patients, but critics faulted the way they were used to determine payouts in the NFL concussion case. Wednesday's announcement comes after a pair of black players fired civil rights lawsuits over the practice. Medical experts raised concerns, and a group of NFL families last month dropped 50,000 petitions at a federal courthouse in Philadelphia, where the lawsuit had been thrown out by the judge overseeing the settlement.
Whoa.
The update from October reads, the NFL agreed to end the race-based adjustments in dementia testing that critics had made it difficult. The revised testing plan follows public outrage. The adjustments, critics say, may have prevented hundreds of Black players from suffering from dementia to win awards that average to $500,000 or more. Black retirees will now have a chance to have their tests rescored, or in some cases, seek a new round of cognitive testing, according to the settlement, details of which were first reported in the New York Times on Wednesday. The vast majority of the league's players, 70% of active players, and more than 60% of living retirees are Black. So the changes are expected to be significant and potentially costly for the NFL. Don't fucking care. Pay them.
Yeah, I really don't care. They can lose all the money. Yeah.
More than 3,300 former players or their families have sought awards for brain injuries linked to paying their playing days, more than 2,000 of them for moderate to advanced dementia. As of 2022, the degenerative brain disease associated with repeated blows to the head has been found in the brains of more than 320 former NFL players.
That number is far too high.
While the NFL continues to throw money at researchers and denies any wrongdoing in the past, things aren't really changing. From the New York Times, the league again is under scrutiny, this time over some of those doctors diagnosed a head hit to quarterback Tua Tagovailoa of the Miami Dolphins 2 weeks ago. After holding his helmet, struggling to get up and falling again, Tagovailoa was taken to the locker room, examined, and then allowed to return to the game.
My God.
The NFL at first said that it was the Dolphins team doctor and an unaffiliated neurotrauma consultant who evaluated the player had followed established protocols. But the NFL Players Association initiated a joint investigation into the incident, and after the player suffered an even bigger head hit in a game 4 days later and left the field on a stretcher, the union dismissed the unaffiliated consultant.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, like, yes, please get that person out of there, but like, oh my God.
I know. The NFL and the NFL Players Association have agreed to update the NFL's concussion protocol following a review of the injury. The new concussion protocol added that players will not be able to play if they are experiencing ataxia, which is a lack of coordination caused by poor muscle control. That should have been on there before. I don't know why it wasn't.
I just think maybe if you take a really big hit to the head, you should be allowed to sit out a few games.
Maybe you should go lie down. So I want to end on these two notes. A neurosurgeon from Boston University, who has been studying all of this, says that each hit in football, when tackling someone, is about 20 G's of force, which is the equivalent of driving 35 miles per hour into a brick wall.
Oh my God.
And that happens on average to each football player 1,000 to 1,500 times a year.
Oh my God.
Multiple neurosurgeons and doctors said that they would never let their children play football at all.
Yeah, it's going to be a hard pass for me if I ever have kids.
Especially before 14 years old. Because based on what we know about children's brains, they have more space to move around because their brains are still growing. They are softer, and that when they hit up against the skull, it is not okay and incredibly dangerous. Please, 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 please consider enrolling your child in another sport before letting them play football. Their future, their mental health, and their life is literally at risk.
Wow, Katie. Holy shit.
Yeah. And I hate football.
That last quote was a doozy. Damn. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I guess I've never really thought about it as far as the number of how many times that happens in a year, but that's a crazy, that was crazy. That's a wild number. Wow.
Yeah. Between practices and games and all of it. Yeah. Protect your fucking noggins, y'all. I might just start wearing a helmet all the time.
But like we said, the helmet doesn't stop the brain from moving.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to lay in my bed all the time. Just forever in bed.
Wow. I feel like I want to bubble wrap my brain.
How do I do that? Can I like inject bubble wrap into my head? Is that a thing? Is there a surgery I can do?
Can I inject some like Flex Seal into my brain?
Well, yeah. Like, isn't there like some like liquid that it hangs out in? Can we like make that a gel so it just sits?
Very thick gel. It's
like a nice. A nice jello, you know, give it a little protective cushion. So that's football, that's CTE. I hope that this episode was worth the wait.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was for me.
Yeah, and we got another one coming,
another one this week. We told you we would do it, and we're going to.
We promised, so here we are.
We love you. It's 10:43 p.m. on Monday.
Go to sleep.
I need to edit this. We'll see you in a few days. Bye.
Bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.